It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and hope you're going to enjoy the show this morning. I'm starting off with a trip I just had to Saskatchewan. Just returned the other day, and I thought I would share with you some observations from the Canadian prairies. But before I do, I thought I would actually share with you what it's like to be an American today trying to go into Canada to go hunting. The Canadians have been wondering why the number of people hunting in Canada, particularly Americans, has been plummeting. They need look no further than the experience that I had at the Saskatoon Airport when entering Canada last week, to understand why people will say, I don't think I really need to go to Canada. Why don't I just stay in the United States if I want to hunt? Even though Canada is a special place, I've been going there, I think, every year uninterrupted since 1981, which is a long time, and I've seen how things have changed. Crossing the border used to be, you waved at the border guard, you stopped for a moment, you had a conversation about where you're going. You might have talked about what you're going to be hunting. You might have said, you know, you actually had a conversation with this agent at the Canadian border. And the same was true when you came back into the United States. We used to drive our cars, our dogs, ammunition, and guns, just completely as though the United States and Canada were one country. I never had a border crossing issue of any kind. And each year in the last, I would say, 10, it's been getting more and more difficult, to the point where the experience I had in Saskatoon the other evening pretty much says to me, we're not welcome here. And not only are we not welcome here, it really isn't worth the hassle. Now, in saying that, I'm not going to give up something that I've been doing since 1981 and headed up to the North Country to smell the air, watch the leaves turn, and to have the experience of being in some of the greatest wilderness on earth. But it is certainly not the way it was, and the world is not the way it was. But you would think that Americans and Canadians would be able to, excuse me, you think that Americans and Canadians would be able to work out a system if we both want to have hunting continue in Canada, and the Canadians do want to have hunting continue in Canada, and they need the Americans' dollars. So here's what happened. Landed in Saskatoon with my good friend Chris Dorsey to make a television show for Sporting Classics and Ram Outdoors. We were in Saskatoon. I was traveling light, which means I did not have any guns. Chris Dorsey had the guns. We arrive. The guns are registered in his name. I start to go through customs. I actually am through customs, and I tell the person that I'm going hunting. They ask, what are you doing? And I said, I don't. They asked if I had a gun. I said, no, I don't have a gun. I am borrowing his gun. Oh, you can't borrow a gun in Canada. The quote, the line to me was, it's the equivalent of driving a car without a license. If you don't have a license to carry a gun in Canada, you are a felon. So go get in that line and stand there. So I stood in the line with Mr. Dorsey, who had the guns. He had to register the guns in his gun in my name, even though it was not my gun, and I then had to pay the fee to enter the country with a gun that wasn't my gun so that I could have that gun in possession when I was duck and goose hunting for the next 3 days. That process took about an hour, and I said, well, what happens if I come to Canada and I don't have a gun and I'm not with the person who has my gun? And let's just say that they are already here or they're meeting me separately. This happens to thousands of Americans. And I was told, you can't do that. You have to come in the country with the gun you are going to be shooting, or you get a borrower's permit. But a borrower's permit can only be issued to a Canadian citizen. So I'm coming into the country as an American. I can get a borrower's permit, provided I'm going to hunt with a Canadian whose guns are registered and licensed. And by the way, most Canadians have said to the federal government, we are not licensing our guns. So the idea of getting his gun or her gun licensed so that I could borrow it is not going to happen. So what they've really done is they have gone and made it about as difficult as it is possible to bring a firearm into Canada. It is easier to bring a firearm into Argentina. It is easier to bring a firearm into South Africa. It's easier to bring a firearm into Mexico and Nicaragua, all of which I've done in recent years, none of which have occurred with the hassle and the amount of paperwork that it takes to bring a shotgun into Canada so that you can go duck or goose or grouse hunting. So to complicate the matters and to make it even more ridiculous, we were hunting with an outfitter where the filming was taking place. And in this case, we had a guide. The guide in Canada is not allowed to carry a firearm when he is guiding quote-unquote clients. So we are sitting in the blind, and we shot some birds. And there were a couple of birds that sailed off into a distant wheat field. And I handed my gun to the guide, who was going to run and get them. And he said, no, I can't take your firearm because I'm not licensed to carry your firearm. And therefore, even though I'm going to retrieve game that needs to be retrieved, I will be a felon if I touch your gun and carry it across the field. So think about this. The guns are now registered. They're legal to be in Canada, but a hunting guide can't take your shotgun from you to go and do what a guide needs to do because he is not allowed to carry a firearm while he's hunting in Canada as a guide. I am not allowed to take the person's gun next to me and do the same thing. And it's happened to us. One of our guns failed to work. I am not allowed, or nor is that individual then allowed, to take the gun that I am shooting and shoot with that gun because he is not allowed. He is not licensed to have that gun. It is the most absurd system. Furthermore, in Canada now, if there are three of you in a blind, there can only be three guns. So if it's happened to us, one of the gun breaks, one of the person whose gun broke is actually not allowed to hunt anymore. I can't loan him my gun. You're not allowed to have a fourth gun on the blind. So he would have to go back to the place that we were staying and pick up his shotgun and drive back to be able to hunt, provided that shotgun was actually registered to him in his person. And if for some reason coming across the border, I ended up registering the wrong number for the wrong gun, I'm a felon, and I go to jail in Canada. So in describing this situation, it's pretty clear to me why there are so few Americans now going to Canada. We don't want to put up with this. I'll go hunt in North Dakota or South Dakota, and no, it won't be the same. And maybe this is what the Canadian government would like to have happen. They'd like no one to come hunting in Canada. But the reality is the tourism industry would like Americans to come hunting in Canada. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands of Canadians that have long-time relationships with Americans. They would like Americans to come visit them and spend money in their local economies and help control crop depredation from birds. But the Canadian government has made this just about impossible. So my word to you is if you're going, and you know from a fishing perspective, if you're going into Canada and you have had a DUI, you cannot enter the country of Canada. A number of you are nodding your heads listening saying you have gotten to the Canadian border or you know a friend who's gone to the Canadian border and actually landed in Toronto or Winnipeg or wherever and been told you may not enter the country because you have a DUI, and a DUI for foreigners in Canada is a felony. So everything about, you know, we talk about NAFTA and we talk about free trade and all these things that are in the news today. What about free trade for law-abiding sportsmen? Why are we being so discriminated against? We're not criminals bringing guns into Canada to smuggle them in for gangs or any kind of resale. We're just hunters. We're just people who've gone to Canada for all of our lives, or maybe we're going for the first time to partake in one of the most extraordinary experiences you can have in a country that has tremendous wildlife resources, a lot of open space, and yet we're being told no. We're going to make it as hard as we can. As I said, it is easier today to take a gun into South Africa or Argentina than it is into Canada. Why? So maybe President Trump and all those people negotiating NAFTA, maybe they ought to ask the Canadians, why are you making it so miserable on Americans to come to your country? Because that's really what's happened. Maybe they just don't want our business. But they certainly want us to buy their products. They certainly don't like tariffs. They don't like any of that. But when the shoe's on the other foot, maybe they don't want our business after all. And I have a feeling if many more people have to go through what I went through to get into Canada last week, they're not going to get our business. And then they're going to wonder, whoa, how come our revenues are drying up? How come nobody's coming to hunt? And the reason's going to be is because we're not going to put up with it anymore. And I hate to say this because I'm so vested in Canada, but I'm about not to put up with it anymore. It's wrong. It treats us as criminals. It dehumanizes us. It's a system that is designed by bureaucrats who have no idea how the world works. If your shotgun jams in a blind, of course you're going to borrow the shotgun of the person next to you. Not in Canada. If you're caught doing that, you're a felon and you go to jail. I'll be back in just a moment. When I come back, I promise you I'm going to talk about bicycles in Chicago and get you thinking about what is actually taking place in our urban centers with bicycles. So thanks for listening. That's my story on Canada. The hunting was great, by the way, when my gun worked. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland, Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I promised you I'm going to talk about bicycles in the city of Chicago, which may be applicable to other cities. And I'm sure that Mayor Rahm Emanuel is not going to like what I have to say. But I'm going to ask some questions, or maybe something for us to think about, is what is going on with bicycles in the city of Chicago, and at what expense have we gone to make a few people's lives more convenient at the incredible inconvenience of the rest of us? So my point on this is I was walking around downtown in Chicago for about 3 hours on a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous August afternoon. In between meetings, I had a total of 3 hours of walking around the Loop, which is the heart throb of Chicago's business district and bicycles. And I was struck pretty early on that every bicycle rack with the city supplies to rent these bikes that I walked by was full. There wasn't a bicycle out of them. And then I started to think, where in fact are the bike riders? 3 hours, and this is not an exaggeration. This is, by my count, walking around the Loop for 3 hours on a day in the summer when everybody should be on a bicycle, I saw seven people on a bicycle other than messengers or policemen who ride bikes. And, of course, the messengers are not using the bike lanes that have been put up all over the city of Chicago. I saw seven people out of the tens of thousands of people walking around downtown who were on a bicycle. On a percentage basis, it would be zero. And I did not see a single bike rack that was not 100% full, which means that nobody was running those bikes. The seven people I saw on bicycles, six of them were on what appeared to be a personal bicycle, and only one of them was on a blue bicycle. I don't know where they picked it up, but all the bike racks I looked at downtown, not one bicycle rack had a bike missing on it. This bike program is a joke. And again, Rahm Emanuel is going to probably come unglued at hearing that. It is a joke. And it's a joke because of the amount of money, the tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, that we have spent creating bike lanes in the city of Chicago. Anywhere you go in Chicago, you've got traffic now being compromised by bike lanes. The Loop is a great example. Barricades. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it hasn't been several hundred million dollars that we've spent to create bike lanes in the city of Chicago. For what purpose? For a few people? Even if 2,000 or 3,000 people, which I think is probably a vast overstatement, were to actually ride their bikes into the Loop to go to work, at what cost to the millions of other people that are using the Loop are we accommodating a couple of thousand people? And the reason I say I don't think we're accommodating a couple of thousand people, aside from the bike rental racks You have personal bike racks. Take a walk around the city of Chicago on a beautiful day and see how many bikes are padlocked to the personal bike racks. I didn't happen to keep track of those numbers. I wasn't thinking about it, but very few. In fact, most of the personal bike racks are empty too. So what it tells me is that people did not ride their bikes to work on an August day because they're not chained to the bike racks in front of all the buildings. They're mostly empty. And that people are not using these bikes to ride around and do business because all the bike racks are full. And there were seven people in 3 hours that, other than messengers to policemen, that I actually saw on a bicycle. Now, this isn't a Saturday or Sunday. Maybe on a Saturday or Sunday and a beautiful day in the summer, maybe Chicago is lit up with all these blue bikes being rented. But, again, at what cost? We have so many problems in our urban centers in America. Education, crime, traffic, infrastructure. Just take a walk and actually take a boat ride under the Chicago, under the bridges on the Chicago River, and you might never drive a car again over a bridge in the Chicago River when you look at all the rotting wood, yes, wood, left over from the 1800s that's along the Chicago River and the metal beams that are corroding. And yet we have spent tens, maybe hundreds of millions. It would actually be interesting if the Chicago Tribune or the Sun-Times did an investigative report to say, to find out how much we've actually spent on bicycle lanes and bicycle barricades and signs and bike racks and bike rentals throughout the city of Chicago. It would be pretty interesting the number to know, because while it might be nice that we've got a few bicycles around, it sure is not worth the expense we've made, and the public is telling us we are not using them. Just walk around the loop, and you'll see for yourself. So my comment is, I love the outdoors. I think it's great that we're using less cars, but at what cost? The cost to society of doing this in time and traffic is enormous, and actual physical dollars to rearrange our streets so that we could have a few bicycles on them, it's not worth it. We have pandered to a very, very small, perhaps local, but a very small minority. So next week, I'll take you back into the wild somewhere in America, and some conservation issues that are definitely brewing with the Farm Bill and election. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter and the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.